Welcome to the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast with me, Kathy Love. I'm a business coach who helps allied health professionals run powerful and profitable businesses in the disability sector. Join me for cutting-edge interviews with leaders in the allied health and business fields, along with plenty of practical content that you can use to make your business practice perfect. Our guest today is Sue Gregory, an occupational therapist. But interestingly, when I asked her how she wanted to be introduced, she's now known as Susie Gregory. What's the story with that, Sue?
Well, I've always been Sue Gregory, but I have a mother now who is 96 and a half years old. And she's always called me Susie, and I've liked the energy of Susie. And so I just decided, as I'm having a change in direction in my business, that I'm Susie. So now I'm Susie Gregory.
Wonderful. When we were together a couple of weeks ago, I noticed you were introducing yourself as Susie, but I just never got round to asking you about that, or if that was a different Susie Sue that I knew. So change is cool, hey?
Well, it has a different energy around the around it. Which is why I enjoy it, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your occupational therapy adventure so far, because you've done a lot of very cool stuff.
Well, I have, and I guess if I was to summarise it, some people would know perhaps if they were around in occupational therapy at that time, the development of driving assessments by occupational therapists. And that commenced in 1985-86 with the first course, which I taught, having trained as a driving instructor because I saw a need in the hospital I was working where head-injured people were returning to driving. So applied for a scholarship and got an RACV scholarship and travelled to the States and looked at what was happening in driver rehabilitation and found that not many OTs were actually doing the driving. It was mostly people who were driving instructors who'd done further training and saw an avenue for OTs. So I liaised together with the Driver Education Centre of Australia and with a group of other occupational therapists who had expertise in various areas of occupational therapy, we wrote a manual which addressed the different aspects, the cognitive and the physical aspects of driving and what was needed. So the course was a 2-week training course, which now, as you're aware, driving is really an integral component of occupational therapy. So from there, I went overseas and worked for a while I had what was to be a short working holiday in Canada and ended up being a long stint of enjoying backcountry skiing. And I had a back injury and became very interested in natural therapies. And when there was opportunity to work less time at the hospital, I started up a natural therapy clinic using the skills that I'd learnt from various trainings, which went very well. Then on returning to Australia, moved into vocational rehab, and the company decided to pull out of Tasmania, where I was at the time, so we had the opportunity to take on our own clients, which is really when the full occupational therapy private practice flowered, which is now in its 19th year, actually.
Amazing.
Yeah, long time. So it started off with doing mostly workers' comp work. And at the time I was doing training in solution-focused psychotherapy, which now is a big part of solution-focused strength-based approach is a big part of coaching. And so I applied those principles in the manual handling training that I was doing in a big manufacturing company. And what happened from that was 120 blue-collar workers, the work we did together had an immense change in the culture and the attitudes of their work and their contribution to making suggestions that were more ergonomic. And the general manager came along to our awards ceremony and said, "This is amazing. This is what I've been trying to do. Can you coach me?" So I began coaching him, and it soon began to be more personal with how could he manage his energy with his workload that he had. And I realized there was an avenue for working with other leaders. And the back injury that I'd had at the time wouldn't have happened had I, at the time, the warning scenes been picked up by leadership at the time that I was working too hard, being out in the car with my foot over the emergency brake and needing to have extra support. And so I realized that I could bring my skills to helping leaders be more safety aware, more conscious of how they led their people and their organizations. So I, at that point, held the intent that I wanted to start coaching CEOs because they could influence their workplaces to be safer and to have organizations that were focused more on wellness. And holding that intent, within 6 months, I had 9 CEOs on my books. And I've got to be very honest with you. I had no background business training, and I didn't even know what a board was or what a board did. But the coaching skills are such that you deal with what's in front of you. And so from that, it led to running a CEO leadership circle for people in the aged care industry, and that went for 10, 11 years. Those people came originally with adjusting their ties in the front of their suit and not wanting to share information. By the end of it, saying to each other in the group, "I've stuffed up big time. This is what I did. What do you guys think?" And so that was a huge support that they all really looked forward to. Once a quarter, it would go for half a day, then it extended to being a whole day. And that was CEOs from all over Tasmania at the time. So from there, it was time to have a change, and my husband and I had been up on holiday in the centre, and we were both really drawn to the desert. And so I, by that time, had a very busy consulting business and thought, why am I leaving this to go up to a town of 25,000? I was at that time in Tasmania flying from there to coach heads of government departments in different cities and do leadership and team building retreats with their executive teams. So I flew, we came up here to a town of 25,000, and I've kept flying out to go and do work and began to be tired of that. I just wanted to be here in the land that we'd come to. And I had, from the injury, I had a background in working with energy and energy therapies. And through that, met a medicine man locally. And that led into another avenue of private practice, which was taking leaders and people who were healthcare professionals out into the desert for a 4-day immersion in the silence of the desert, receiving indigenous healings and smokings, and that's not a cigarette, that's smoking where you walk through the fire and going to sacred water holes and places and being able to reflect on their career, or in the case of a group of psychiatrists that came, was looking at how they delivered mental health. So having the time to have those in-depth conversations on how they led their lives and how they led their work. And so that was an amazing 10 years. And from that, I have now that moved into working remote and working with Indigenous people out in small desert communities. And you had the pleasure of coming on one of those trips. Yeah. And I have the opportunity to do energy therapies as part of that work. And then more recently, having an interest in trauma and wanting to now zero in more specifically on just offering holistic occupational therapy, which is any energy-based medicine, looking at the spirit, the holistic aspect of the person where from which health or ill health really begins. So there's been a number of phases in that 19 years. So I guess the take-home message from that is if you're doing something in your practice, it is easy because of our profession to morph into an area that you have a passion for. And a lot of it is around your intent. So that's a summary.
That's a great summary. It's a brilliant summary. So it is about your intent, and I will get to that in a little tick, but how would you describe your curiosity about your profession and what sits outside your profession?
Well, I'd have to say what sits outside my profession is something that I've never considered, because I consider occupational therapy boundaryless. And by that I mean, if I look at a lot of the work that I've done, there's aspects of it that are things that hadn't been done in occupational therapy, to the extent that I was able to explore them. For example, driving was not a part of learning activities of daily living. It wasn't something that occupational therapists were involved in. And then when I was I had trained in therapeutic touch, which is a energy-based medicine that was developed at New York University by a professor and a natural healer. And I studied with them for 10 years when we lived over in North America, and came back and began introducing it to aged care, and received a government scholarship support for that. And one of their mentors said, you need to make this fit within the OQF system, the Australian Qualification System, so that it's competency-based. So I wrote competencies for that and set up a registered training organisation so that it was a valid training that people could do. And energy-based training at that stage under the competencies was still relatively new. This would be probably 15 years ago now. And I found that in working in dementia units, training people, that sometimes it was very hard to get the staff to have 3 days off to do the training. And what they most needed to do was to have a way of settling people with who are wandering at 3 o'clock, sundowners system, sundowners it's called, in the afternoon. And so taking some of the training that I'd done, I developed a one-day program which we called Serenity Settling. And that was teaching the staff how to place one hand over the adrenals, hold the other hand and walk beside the person, and to deliberately use their intention to ground themselves so that they were passing on this sense of grounded, peaceful, serene calmness to the person. And invariably what would happen is that people would start to slow down in their walking and eventually want to sit down and sometimes go to sleep. So we did, together with a colleague from America, we wrote a book called Silver Energy, which was around showing people how to do that process. The other thing, I guess, was, you know, in looking beyond the square, was occupational therapy, exploring the areas of the way another culture did their healing and how they thought about wellness and health. And that led to, of course, the retreats, going out with a medicine man So it was certainly a special request back to Aon Insurance to check that that would be covered by occupational therapy insurance, and sure enough, it was. So from that perspective, I think for anyone in private practice is to look for the opportunities in places that you wouldn't think there being, and looking to where the demand is, what the need is, and what is it that you can create that's new to occupational therapy that's going to create avenues of new professional possibilities for people down the line.
And personal joy as well. Change has certainly been a theme of your career and your business experience, and part of it, as I hear it, has been that layering up of something new, something different, some joy, connecting with the impact, all the rest of it. Sometimes I'm in conversation with OTs, I guess, in particular, who feel very bound and defined by their occupational therapy boundaries, and they want to do yoga and they want to be musical performance, and they want to do dance, and but they sort of feel that it's, the words that break my heart are unprofessional. I get quite distressed about having those kind of hedges around your mindset, really, in terms of what else could bring joy to you and amazing life opportunities for the clients as well.
Oh, I've got some good comments around that. And one of them is to look at your own energy levels. And if something isn't giving you joy, you just have low energy and it can be boring. And to be not afraid to take the risk, because there will be people who won't like you, what you're doing. And I remember when I had done all this therapeutic touch training, I went back to the hospital I was working in Canada, and began using therapeutic touch with permission of the head OT. It was a big OT department of, I think, about 40, 50 OTs. And the student I had at the time was watching me give therapeutic touch, and the woman was getting so much relief. It was helping her walking. It would relax her hands for making splints. And at this point, I probably need to explain, therapeutic touch is moving the hands over the body without touching, so that there's an energy transfer into the system, of course done with permission. And this person had such a relaxation response that it would mean that I could move her fingers into the shape for the splint. But unbeknownst to me, this student was most upset that I was doing this thing that wasn't part of occupational therapy, and was doing her whole project for presentation for the department on why this work was a scam.
Oh, gosh.
And I remember hearing some of my fellow OTs calling me, oh, there's the she's doing witchy stuff. Which at the time, being a younger OT, it was like, oh, gosh, this means just tread lightly, speak carefully, and make sure you've got the backing of those who understand and those who are higher up, which I did. And so I guess my message is, if you like yoga and you want to add it into your practice, add it.
Absolutely.
Get the little bit of paper you need so that you can do it.
Yeah.
It's about keeping your own energies up and doing things you love.
Yeah. I don't know whether to go with the energy question or the intention question, and I know they're beautifully tangled. Explain to us a little bit more about tension and the intention that you've experienced as being necessary for your clinical practice and your business practice.
Okay. Well, what I can explain, this is something that we have done out on the leadership retreats at Bush. For example, when, from my understanding, when Indigenous people, for example, were hunting kangaroos, they would have had to go into a very still state and have an intent that somehow unamazingly passed into the animals, which had a big effect on you know, game being where they needed game to be. The intent is so crucial in the therapeutic relationship. And one of the exercises we did on this retreat was to experience what it's like having somebody walking towards you and they don't care about you. And then having and experiencing what that energy feels like and how you pick that up, how you know it. And then having somebody walk slowly towards you, having an intent that this is somebody amazing who has so many gifts and it's going to be a pleasure to be with them, to talk to them, and to talk about what the experience was like. And participants would first of all say, you know, I just felt low in energy, I felt apathetic, what's the point in trying? And then with the second part of the experiment, participants say, wow, you know, I just wanted to have a go, whatever this person was going to show me or talk about, because I know they could see my strengths. So intent is very, very subtle. And it's something, if we look at the various layers of occupational therapy model, spirituality is a, you know, the central component to that. It's the energy we give out, and the energy we give out is based on the thoughts we're holding for that person or this event. So if we're holding an intent that's healthy for our business or is thinking for the best for the person we're working with, they know. Mm. They don't need to say anything. They know. And I've really learned about that with being out in the Indigenous communities, that people don't listen to the words that you say. They hear those words. But really what they're doing is they're assessing what's in your heart. They're assessing the feel of you. And they get that by the energy that comes off from the thoughts that you have.
Mm. How has it guided? How has intention guided you with business decisions?
I'd have to say by holding an intent.
Mm.
So having an intent that's so clear that it's palpable. So I'm not one for bits and pieces of, you know, to have papers and business plans, but a picture that I've got in my head that I can use the five senses, I can taste it, I can smell it, I can feel it, can give me everything I need. And I remember when I started coaching CEOs, I had an uncanny experience where I pictured myself. And it wasn't purpose, it just came to me, if that makes sense. It came to me that I was going to be up in a tall tower, sitting in a chair opposite this man, and I'd have something blue on, and he'd be asking me to do something. I got a call probably 18 months after that from somebody I'd met on an aeroplane who the plane couldn't take off, and so we ended up chatting for quite some time, and I was telling him about the injury I'd had and how that had given me a passion to work with leaders so their organisations were safe. He had hunted me down and said, can you come and work with our oil company around safety, because I liked your story. And it's natural the way you approach it, and it's not using artificial kind of programs that come from the head. And here we were in this tall building in Collins Street, and I was wearing blue. And it only occurred to me afterwards, oh, that's right. That was a vision I had.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's the potent part. It's like the center of – it's like the spiritual center of occupational therapy. Intent is the spiritual center of your business. That's where the energy emanates from.
Mm. How do you manage your energy?
How do I manage my energy?
Please just tell me everything. Just everything. We've got 3 hours. Go for it.
You didn't tell me this interview was that long.
Yeah.
I have a daily practice plans that's a bit like a pantry that I know I'm going to do 2 or 3 hours of things that will enhance my energy. And so depending on the day, I'll pick out salt and pepper from the pantry or a packet of flour or some dried fruit. So it could be a combination of things like yoga. Definitely meditation is in there every day. Sometimes when I walk, I have different chants that I do. I also can give myself acupuncture or do qigong. Sometimes it's reading interesting quotes, or sometimes it's being in together in a class with others. A lot of the time, it's giving myself my own energy treatment session. So wellness is a big component, and visualizing myself well. And that's become a lifelong lesson because, as I mentioned, that back injury, I had chronic pain for 3 or 4 years after that and went through a rehab program, which included all the allied health professions and included OT, which was delightful. And at the end of it, I was considered okay to go back to work. And I went back to work, worked the full day, and was in so much pain, and spent the weekends recovering. And so I was off the books on the insurance company. I was well, but I knew that I was carrying soul pain, that I'd lost my identity as an OT who was doing the exciting field of developing the driving area for the profession. And at the same time, I found out that I couldn't have children. So a planned identity that I didn't have. And it was a very deep, dark few months as I processed that. And then I came to a very clear conclusion that the only person who could get me well was me. And that was what started my healing journey, starting off with relaxation techniques, which was really part of OT training back then. Opened into many avenues, hypnotherapy and different energy modalities. So, yeah, wellness has been a big part of my life ever since then.
Yeah. And the power of the daily routines, and it's not a monotonous regime, it's a toolbox that you select from.
Indeed.
On a daily basis. Yeah.
Some of the things might be only 1 minute long. So equal breathing, for example, or there's a figure of eight breathing, which comes from the embraining processes, or it can be an autogenic self-hypnosis process that can go for 5 minutes just to refill one's energy, or to there's amazing things you can do in the car as you're driving along, different sounds from your center of your head, from your throat, from your heart, where you focus on those as you drive, that at the end of a 3-hour drive, you'll feel better than you start. So lots of strategies there for OTs to use.
Well, all business owners are, energy management. I think sometimes I hear that it's the symptom is time management and a sense of being busy but not productive. And if you dig down, that your energy management actually sits at the very core of a lot of that. And my recent reading of the last few years and the energy practitioners that I'm working with, that it's not a time management, it's an energy allocation management and an energy renewal plan as well. And I'm finding this work personally really, really fascinating. So, it'll be interesting to hear about what mainstreams in years to come around the beliefs and the language. I'm getting a little sense of it already. But all for it, all for the energy awareness and the energy plan.
Organisations certainly are looking at it, and I'm just thinking of some aged care facilities I worked at where, as well as doing the handover, the process that I was teaching people was how to centre to maintain their energy flow, because what happens when we're busy or we're feeling time poor, that to describe an energy assessment, if you were to run your hands over the field around that person, it's quite likely around the head that the energy would feel hot. It would feel a little bit prickly or tingly, and then as you move your hand down the feet, towards the feet, there'd be a sense of almost nothing there. All the energy and effort is going on in the head, and there's not much flow that's going down through the rest of the body. So the energy management also is, how do you get your energy field to be balanced all over? Because when it is, those issues can go away. The mind settles down.
Yeah.
And we're more grounded. So grounding is a big part of that.
Mm. Yep. Feeling better already, Sue, as always, whenever I talk to you.
I guess I can just say a bit about grounding, is that because it's a big part of energy medicine, is, and sometimes it's called earthing, is that when the purpose of a lightning rod is so that when the lightning hits, it's not going to burn something up, that it's going to go down through the rod into the ground and dissipate. So what happens for therapists is that often we're working with somebody who's traumatized or stressed, or we're taking on sometimes inadvertently those energies. People who are chronically depressed, we can go away feeling depressed or down ourselves and low in energy. So that's because what's happening is we're not being the lightning rod. We're taking in all of those energies, and it's not a core part of most body workers' training to learn how to manage that. And so we have to become like that lightning rod by having the intent of our feet deep in the ground and having an awareness of our connection to the earth by putting our mind almost below our feet, 20, 30, 40 feet. And that will help the flow go through us rather than getting stuck in us.
Mm. And that taking your work home.
Yeah. Been there, done that.
Yep. Now, your business has changed shape quite a few times. And when we were up in Alice Springs a couple of weeks ago, we were sort of talking a little bit dancing around the what next bit for you and the business. And is it downsizing? Is it some other sort of thing? What have you noticed about your business and as it's matured and what it is and what it isn't?
It's morphing again, I can tell you that. And first of all, that begins with a sense of dissatisfaction and not knowing what that's about. So I don't know if any other OTs listening ever have that. And
plenty of business owners have that.
And what do I need to do that really interests me, is inspires me? And some things that I've done, I just never want to do again. I never want to do another raised bath seat, if I can ever, or toilet seat. I'm sure OTs have got
other. I'm grounding right now, Sue. I've got my feet off and they're digging into the floor.
Yeah. So I guess with our businesses, we're building it up, and then we're in a stage where it's going along steady, and then there's a change where we either morph into something else or you begin to downsize, depending on how long we've been doing what we're doing. So for me, I'm looking at a phase now of creating a business that fits in with what I want to do in parts of my life other than work. So I want to, for example, be able to travel overseas and do things in different places, so not necessarily needing to have a clinic space. And so the vision that I'm holding at the moment is around doing energy work together with people through the internet, and wherever I am, being able to do hands-on work with people for trauma, which I really really love to do. So really focusing in specifically on holistic OT, which is based in the more natural therapy aspects of treatment that fit and can fit under our banner of occupation. So that's where it's heading in this phase, and I figure that I can still be doing that when I'm 80.
Absolutely. Older and wiser.
Yeah. So combining that with, so I still do a lot of coaching of leaders over the internet. So this will fit very well into that.
How much are you going to potentially miss your work with Indigenous Australians?
I don't know that I'm quite ready to give aspects of it that up. There are challenges. It's extremely hot, as we all know. Climate's getting drier, and being out there with lots of flies when it's 45 degrees is a challenging thing to do. But at the moment, I find for myself just being around the elders who have such wisdom, and to sit with them in silence when they don't say a lot is there's something that I learned that doesn't come from words. And it's a real privilege to work with them. They're very open to energy healing is, you know, is their first port of call for health before they will come to a clinic. So it's wonderful to have their feedback whenever they ask me to give them a treatment, and it feels an honour, and the same for their children. So I guess what I'm saying here is that if I'm learning something, I keep doing it.
What else would you like to share with listeners about your OT business journey today? I don't like journey. I just have a thing for that word. What would you like to share with listeners about your OT and business learnings and adventure to date?
Well, I guess I never liked the word business. I kind of related it with
business. Yeah, it's a typo, a Y or an I.
I am, you know, apart from having the very clear intents that I talked to you about, I tend to, I remember a quote once by Milton Erickson, who has done a lot of work around hypnosis, and he said something about, he said, sometimes when I look back over my career, that's how I know now what I was doing then that I didn't know then.
That's wonderful. I've not heard that.
Yeah. I guess there's those of us who don't logically sit down and plan, going to do this, this and this, and just operate in a more intuitive way of doing things. And it has indeed worked for me. Going where the energy is.
Lots of ways of being right.
Well, if right's even a term.
Right for you, right then.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing your story. There you go. Your first podcast is all done, Sue.
Well, I must say, Kathy, it's been a pleasure. And it was a pleasure having you come out to the bush with me and sleep with the ladies out on the land.
Yeah. So to kind of paint the picture on that story, really quickly, I had some time in Central Australia with Sue a few months ago, or a couple of weeks ago, and went out onto one of the remote communities, and I was a little bit helpful in the school and kind of didn't get myself into too much bother other than just completely dehydrating myself on the first day. But once we got once I got out of my own way, we had the magical opportunity of being invited out bush for the night with some of the elders, the ladies, and I slept in a swag and I slept under the stars. Didn't quite taste the kangaroo tail, but happy to do so next time. But that vibration that soil provides and the vibration and wisdom of those elders is absolutely palpable. And very, very fortunate to have had that opportunity. So huge thanks to you, Sue, for what you've contributed to my personal and professional journey to date.
That's a pleasure. And I guess one other thing, if people are interested in the Serenity Settling, to email me. I do have an ebook that I can send to you, and also a CD called Being on Centre.
Lovely. We can put some links to them in the show notes. Mm-hmm. Easily done. Thank you, Sue.
Pleasure, Kathy. Absolute pleasure. Hopefully we'll see you out in the bush again soon.
I hope so.
See you.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast. For show notes and other resources, please visit practicemadeperfectpodcast.com. While you are there, you can subscribe for future episodes and continue your business adventure with me. And please be sure to share this and other episodes with your friends and colleagues.